VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And welcome to Crosstalk. I'm Randy Melchert, filling in for Jim Schneider. In 2014, I was a candidate for statewide office. I've helped other people run for office. But there was one office I could never find people who were willing to run for until this year. There's never a shortage of people running for president, and there's usually some people who will be willing to run for governor as each state across the nation. You know, we'll see many candidates who are willing to step out and run for village board or city council. But the most difficult office to find someone willing to run for was school board. Up until this year, we're seeing a record number of candidates running for school boards across the nation. In fact, the Virginia gubernatorial election flipped when the leading candidate said, quote, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." We've seen home education in states growing by 50%, some states even doubling in one year. In fact, over the last couple days, the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program crashed as too many parents were signing up to participate in the private school choice program. Education is on the front burner for the first time in a generation. And this past week was National School Choice Week, the 12th annual celebration of the right, the importance, and the duty of parents to be involved in the education process. With me today is Justin Morales, Wisconsin Director for the American Federation of Children. Justin has served as Common Council President of Cudahy and was named one of the most influential Latinos in Wisconsin. Justin, welcome to Crosstalk today.
Thank you for having me on.
Justin, tell us about National School Choice Week. What is it, and why should our listeners care?
Well, National School Choice Week is an annual celebration of what you just mentioned, parental empowerment and the concept or philosophy of parents having the ability to pick and choose what is ultimately the best education environment for their child. Last week was National School Choice Week, in which 26,000 events were held across America. 32 governors had made proclamations, and 400 city or county made proclamations in support of school choice. And there are many others participated, including light-up ceremonies, such as the Monument Circle in Indianapolis, the Maryland Governor's House, South Carolina's Governor Mansion, and even Niagara Falls.
Now, 32 governor proclamations. I'm looking here at the list, and there's governors from Washington State to Florida. This is almost becoming a bipartisan issue.
Sure. Well, this issue actually started 32 years ago as a bipartisan venture with Tommy Thompson, Representative Howard Fuller, and Wisconsin legislature, who passed it in bipartisan fashion. It has grown now to 31 different states, many of which have seen bipartisan cooperation to get these programs passed.
Now, as part of National School Choice Week, they recently issued a new survey about some of the statistics on school choice. I mean, this started out with very little support and just here in Wisconsin, but then over the last 30 years, it's grown. I think some of the stats are saying that as many as that most parents were even considering finding a new school for their kids within the last year.
Yes. Yeah, so there has never been a time where school choice has been more popular. The pandemic has opened the eyes for many, and you have seen support grow significantly as parents are now faced with real decisions they have to make regarding their children's education. A number of surveys have been put out there, including as many as 52% of parents considering finding a new or different school within just the last year, and 69% of school-aged parents supporting school choice, even higher among Black and Hispanic parents.
Now, by school choice, this is the point of this is that parents, regardless of income, regardless of zip code, should be able to pick, not just those wealthy enough to enroll in a private school?
Yes, in theory. Now, each state has their individual caveats that they have on the program. Here in Wisconsin, we have means testing or financial limits to ensure that low-income families are able to access education opportunities that they particularly would not have otherwise. There's growing demand to expand that so that all families, regardless of income, are able to access some of the same options.
Now, Justin, we've been talking about Wisconsin. So why exactly is Wisconsin so important to school choice?
Well, as I mentioned, Wisconsin was the leader in the school choice movement with the first voucher program starting in Milwaukee 32 years ago.
So here it is in Wisconsin, and now we're I'm looking at some statistics from your organization, American Federation for Children. We have over a dozen states, including Puerto Rico and D.C., with voucher programs. 21 states have tax scholarship programs, 10 states with education savings accounts. I mean, these are reaching, I mean, we're seeing, starting to see millions of students being reached nationwide.
Correct. And school choice extends beyond just that of private school enrollment. You have charter schools, you have public school open enrollment. So far, there are 65 private school choice programs nationwide, with billions of dollars now going directly to the parents to decide what is best for them, including 23 special needs scholarship programs nationwide, which helps parents with some of the most pressing needs for their children's education.
We often hear from parents who say, you know, they care for their kids. They've talked to their school districts, but for whatever reason, their neighborhood school isn't able to serve them. But now we're starting to see just a multitude of options, special need options, tuition tax credit options, saying that, hey, that parents should have the choice, whether it's even a public school in a different district, a charter school, private school, homeschooling. And this has kind of been the focus of this National School Choice Week that we just saw last week.
Correct. And when it comes to parents deciding what is the best option for their child, that often extends beyond academics. While most parents are looking to ensure that their child gets the best education, there's other reasons, including, you know, safety, proximity to family. Their child may have experienced bullying or any number of different factors that they found alternative options to be the better route to go for their child. So there's no one-size-fits-all answer when it comes to why parents are making these. However, we're seeing now more than ever just how important that is.
That is truly, truly exciting to see that parents are starting to wake up and realizing that they have the opportunity, that they don't have to settle for just whatever is assigned to their neighborhood. I had the opportunity of hearing Annette Polly Williams, one of the founders of School Choice, kind of tell her story, or rather people were telling about her story, and that here it was, she was assigned to one of the worst performing schools in Milwaukee, and that she realized that, no, that she was not going to settle for her kid being placed in a low-performing school, and just the battle that's been fought, but now parents are being empowered across the nation. What's been going on with the status of school choice? What are some of the legislative gains that have been happening over the past few years?
Well, there has never been a time where school choice has been more accepted and growing in the legislature. You've seen a number of new programs being instituted, as well as support grown in states such as North Dakota, which has just voted on or is moving forward with a school choice policy in the legislature right at this moment.
We're talking today with Justin Morales, Wisconsin State Director for the American Federation of Children. We are talking here about National School Choice Week. We're seeing states, I mean, from North Dakota, look at the map, Arizona, Nevada, Florida, just nationwide, that there's opportunities for parents to say that they can find a school that shares their values, a school that maybe they're disagreeing with the COVID policies that they're in. They're unhappy with the quality of education. In fact, I mean, it's almost seeming that each day we're seeing stats about how different cities that less than 2% of students are at grade level in reading, and parents are saying, I've had it. I want a better place for my students to be enrolled.
Certainly. I mean, that's one of the consistent struggles we see throughout the country is that particularly in predominantly minority and low-income areas, there's huge proficiency gaps, and that is just a travesty. And we are failing a generation by not ensuring that they get the most out of the education that they need at an early age. So whatever we could do, regardless of the state, regardless of the zip code, we need to be able to ensure that all children are able to access a system that works best for them.
Now, you're also involved with an effort called the Education Freedom Pledge. Tell us, what is this Education Freedom Pledge?
Sure. That is a national, essentially, pledge to support school choice. It's launched by my organization, the American Federation for Children, and can be found at edfreedompledge.com. It is a hosting or a listing of hundreds of state legislators and lawmakers who have signed on and given their support to school choice, as well as thousands of parents. So we have been encouraging people from all across the country to go and visit the website, lend their support, sign on, and tell the world that this is making a huge difference in people's lives, and we need to continue to see it through so that more and more children have access to it.
What are some of the results of this Education Freedom Pledge? I mean, you're able to use data now. You know, a lot of times people think that school choice is maybe a niche issue, but I mean, especially seeing these survey results, seeing that parents, it's at record levels of support. What are you hearing from legislators as you present them this Education Freedom Pledge?
Well, there's always power in numbers, and given that this has seen its share of controversy over the years, knowing that there's people out there, that this movement is growing, that they have the support, that their voters believe in it, that their colleagues believe in it from all over the country, they are empowered now to go out there and take the baton from those such as Polly Williams and Tommy Thompson and others who have really developed the program and run with it on their own so that the next generation is able to receive some value from it.
I was reading here on some of the American Federation for Children website, and they're telling about how one of the candidates was running against a anti-school choice House incumbent, and yet they're able to defeat incumbents by 8 points in Florida, more points in other areas, that they're able to see significant legislative gains. This is an issue that parents are starting to say, we're willing to vote, we're willing to get involved, we're going to make an investment in supporting candidates that stand for school choice.
Absolutely. And we find, going back to bipartisanship, that the most important thing in the world to a parent is their child. Politics, left wing, right wing, does not matter when it comes to that child's future. So when there is pushback or people who try to limit these programs, they are willing to cross party lines and say, I'm voting for my child first and their education matters most. So if you're not going to support that, unfortunately, I can't support you.
Wow. And that's been something that's been unprecedented, is finding some of these issues that are going across party lines to make a difference. Justin Morales is with us from the American Federation for Children. We'll be back after this break. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network.
To Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist and creation researcher with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, how long have spiders been around?
Chris, spiders have been around evidently since creation, and even now evolutionists are admitting they've been around for a long, long time. Recently, a very well-preserved fossil spider was found in rock, dated by evolutionists to be about 300 million years old. Yet it was identical to a modern-day spider, complete with eight legs and even the intricate web-spinning features of modern spiders. The point is, Chris, there's no such thing as a simple organism. They're all complex, right from creation, with all of the abilities that we now attribute to them. Spiders may have had a different lifestyle back before the curse, but there is no such thing as simple to complex evolution, even among spiders. They were created, just like it says, back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
And we're back here on Crosstalk America on the VCY America Radio Network. This is Randy Melchert filling in for Jim Schneider, and we have with us today Justin Morales of the American Federation for Children. Justin, if people are interested in this issue of school choice, where can they go to learn more information about your organization and about school choice in general?
Well, the best resource that I can provide to you is our national website, which is federationforchildren.org. We have a series and a host of comprehensive information broken down by state, if you should choose, as well as anything that you could want to know nationally regarding the program.
That is federationforchildren.org, and you also have kind of the School Choice 101 section of the website. Just what are the types of school choice programs? And there's so many of the different types. There's charter schools, there's private schools. You mentioned earlier public school open enrollment, that parents can say, you know what, that there's not a public school in our district. We want to be able to enroll into another district school to be able to enroll into their school.
That is correct. Here in Wisconsin, we even provide on our local website a breakdown of a school finder app and website that allows parents to go directly review the schools in their particular area, see where they rank on the statewide report card, and some of the important, features that they are offering. We are looking to expand that into other states, and I know that there are other resources out there. So if a parent is looking to choose in a new environment, many are right now, I highly suggest that you check out our website.
A couple months ago, we had actually the National American Federation for Children event here in Milwaukee, and it was so exciting to hear each of the different sessions was introduced by one of the school choice fellows, I believe you call them, and it was so exciting to hear kind of their stories that they had been coming from different challenging environments. They were in an environment that wasn't where they could thrive, and yet thanks to school choice, they've been able to succeed. Many of them are doing wonderful things in the postgraduate life. I'm looking on your website here at the Voices for Choice, and there's over 800 testimonies of children who have benefited from school choice programs that you've done a great job at putting a face to the stories of school choice.
And I really have to give credit to our national team who has been working very hard to collect those, and that list is growing by the day. We often forget when we look at policy issues just how much it actually has an impact on real lives. So this was an initiative that was started by our comms team to really show that there is a name, a face, and a soul behind each and every one of these scholarships or vouchers or whatever the program may be that they're accessing, and just how dramatically that can shape their future. So this is a very powerful, helpful resource for anybody who's just looking to see how people are able to overcome challenges and benefit, which is, as we all know, education and the importance that is in their lives.
Now, on the federationforchildren.org website, if listeners click the Publications tab, you have an incredible resource called the 2021 School Choice Guidebook. And I bring this up because I've talked to families I've talked to people that said when they'd heard about school choice, they say, well, that's maybe what you have in your state, but I don't think we have anything like that in my state. And so listeners are able to go to this website and are able to look at a map of the country and see, because you mentioned earlier, there's 65 different private school choice programs, 31 of these different states, all of these different details. But you have put together, your organization put together this school choice guidebook that not only tells you about some of the new programs, But it's just fascinating to read, I mean, how 600,000 kids are enrolled in private school choice programs across the country. It talks about the states, talks about even some of the different legislative things, where I can go on and I can pull up Ohio or Oklahoma or Wisconsin or Indiana or Arizona, and I can read about all the different choice programs available in my state. This is a wonderful resource.
Absolutely. And we put it out each year. It's a huge project that, I have to celebrate my colleagues for putting this together. However, it is available to the public in our publication drop-down link, and I encourage everyone to go and take a closer look at their individual state. We have some good additional resources as far as where your individual state may rank in regards to program types, funding, things of that nature. So you could learn a lot and then channel some of that information to take them to the next level, including engaging with your local and state elected officials to hopefully encourage them to expand on these programs.
Especially with this being an election year, when some of these candidates for state house are knocking on your door, it's a great time to ask them, hey, what's your position on school choice? You know, especially if you see that your state isn't on here. Or the other nice feature I've noticed is that you also provide a ranking system of school choice programs. You mentioned none of these programs are exactly identical, but your ranking system helps people see what program is available where they are and how their program could even be improved.
Exactly. And there's a lot of detail and research that goes into this, so it is a very in-depth analysis as well as a tremendous amount of statistical information, financial information that is easily balanced so that the average reader is able to distill it all down and absorb it in a way that is quite digestible.
Now, speaking of school choice programs, it was interesting that today is actually, I believe, the second day in a row that the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program website has crashed, just that there is so much demand for parents for these school choice programs?
That is correct. We've touched on this, you know, throughout the conversation here, that there has never been more demand for school choice than there is right now. We're seeing it here in Wisconsin, which has the several different programs, of which is the Wisconsin Parental Choice Program. It's the newest one that has been made available to parents outside of Milwaukee and Racine. There has been so much attention and parents signing on to our Department of Public Instruction website to see how they can sign up. It has crashed the system, which I believe is now 2 days in a row.
That is just so exciting to see that parents taking charge of their kids' education. I mean, this is truly almost a once-in-a-generational opportunity. Now, we're in the month of February, and it's called by the media, it's being promoted as Black History Month each year. What is American Federation for Children doing for Black History Month?
Well, we have always been focused on ensuring that low-income families, and particularly minority families who find themselves in challenging positions, are the primary beneficiaries of school choice. The American Federation for Children has a sub-project called Black Minds Matter, led by Denisha Merriweather, who is out there working with Black-owned schools, pastors, and a number of individuals to really ensure that these minds and these individuals are recognized and receive the equity and equality that they deserve.
And according to some of the statistics, only 15 out of every 100 Black students nationwide are proficient in reading. I mean, this is a national tragedy that students are being denied their potential. Many cases, they're being assigned to some of the lowest performing schools, but now with school choice, they have an opportunity to find a school where they're able to succeed.
Absolutely. And when it comes to how to ultimately address this, I think we need to do some deep soul searching and recognize that just throwing more money at the situation does not always help. We're big proponents for proper funding, and certainly when it comes to the school choice programs, we want to ensure that there is equality when it comes to how these are funded compared to their public school counterparts. However, it's not the end-all, be-all fix to education. So we have to look at these other alternatives, such as school choice, to say, if it's not working for you, take these dollars that you are entitled to and fund the student and not the system, because that's how they're going to be able to thrive and be most successful.
Justin Morales of the American Federation for Children is with us today, and we are talking about National School Choice Week, about the opportunity for parents that, and this was an idea started back, Milton Friedman presented kind of first as a philosophical idea, and now we're actually seeing it in process, the opportunity for parents to enroll their kids in the school of their choice. We were talking about Black Minds Matter. If people are more interested in Black Minds Matter, where can they go, Justin?
Well, we have a link to it directly on the website, federationforchildren.org. I highly encourage people start there, and you'll be able to be redirected there to find more details on it.
Black Minds Matter, to celebrate Black Minds, support excellence, promote the development of high-quality school options for Black students. And the great thing about school choice is that this is a rising tide that lifts all boats. This is an opportunity, whatever ethnicity, whatever background, whatever zip code, that, I mean, we're starting to see opportunities to make a difference in education. And the American Federation for Children has been at the forefront of it. How long has the American Federation for Children, what have they been doing lately nationwide to help make a difference in school choice?
Well, we are very active in dozens of states nationwide. We have an excellent team that is working very hard to organize parents, to advocate at the legislative level, and get involved in elections, because at the end of the day, politics matter. And if we don't have the proper people at the seat to make the ultimate decisions, we will continue to struggle to find these differences. So the American Federation for Children, like you said, is a leader in this regard. We fight every day for children, and we're essentially starting to call ourselves lobbyists for kindergartners. It's a unique approach to putting a spin on what is typically a negative connotation when it comes to lobbying, and really showing that we are here to fight for kids, and that's rewarding and incredibly important.
I'm looking on the Federation for Children site, and you can even read the legislative impact report, that this is about lobbying, not for systems, not for causes, not for, well, for one special interest group, for the children who need a new start, who need a place that they can thrive academically, socially. In many cases, I mean, it's sad to think of it, that you have children that don't feel safe in the school that they're attending.
And again, that is found throughout the world. You know, social media has made that so much more of a prominent issue, and the overall impact on mental health makes having these alternative options all the more important.
Wow. Well, and if people want to learn more about American Federation for Children, website again?
Federationforchildren.org.
Federation for Children. Thank you, Justin Morales, for joining us. After the break, we'll have Jameson Coppola from the American Association of Christian Schools. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network.
Some 2,600 years ago, the prophet Ezekiel foretold a coming time of a coalition of nations that would harbor a hostile intent toward Israel. No matter which political party is in control, and no matter how the calendar turns, this is an issue that does not seem to go away. In the book Middle East Meltdown, Dr. Andy Woods addresses the coming Islamic invasion of Israel. He examines the prophecies in Ezekiel 38 and 39, pointing out what nations will be involved, what is the prophetical timing of these events, why it occurs, and how the Bible points out it will come about.
It's a fascinating look as to how the stage is being set for the Lord's return. In addition, he brings forth 7 points of application for us today. The Middle East Meltdown is available for a donation of $14 or more by calling VCY America at 1-800-729-9829. Call toll-free 1-800-729-9829.
And we're back on Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. This is Randy Melchert filling in for Jim Schneider. Yesterday I was at the American Association of Christian Schools State Leadership Conference, and it was interesting just the effect of COVID on Christian day schools. The first year of COVID, there was a lot of uncertainty. Parents weren't sure if schools were allowed to be open, and we saw many private schools take a slight dip in the first year of COVID. But it was fascinating to see just the skyrocketing interest in Christian education this past year, that we're at just a significant increase in Christian education. We've been talking about the parental involvement in education in its entirety, but we're going to turn now and look at Christian education and also look at, are there some of these threats that are coming to Christian education in this world of school choice? Joining us for the second half of this hour is Jameson Coppola. Jameson is a Master's of Science focused in Educational Administration from Pensacola Christian College and is the Director of Government Affairs for the American Association of Christian Schools, leading the Washington office. Jameson, welcome to Crosstalk.
Hey, thanks. Good to be with you, Randy, and good to be talking to you after seeing you yesterday.
Jameson, we talked earlier this hour about a Virginia gubernatorial candidate who said, "I don't think parents should be telling schools what they should teach." Now, Jameson, how does a biblical worldview about education differ from a secular worldview of education when it comes to what should be even taught to the student?
Yeah, it's a great question and a remarkable statement by a candidate for political office. Many attribute his loss in that race to that statement. But we have a decidedly different view of the principle of parental involvement in education, because really the principle for us, and my boss likes to say it this way, is God's ownership of children and parents' stewardship. And so our schools function with this idea that every child is a unique gift from God, and the parents' responsibility is to steward their education. So we partner with them in the education of children.
So, Jameson, tell us a little bit about your Washington office. You know, most people are they've seen a Christian day school, but what does the Washington office of the American Association of Christian Schools do for Christian education?
Yeah, if I had to summarize it, I'd probably say we're a conduit for communication. On one hand, we are able to keep our folks informed about what's happening on the national level, the federal level, as it affects our schools. We are, as an association, especially concerned about religious liberty. And I say often that our concern about religious liberty is tied to educational freedom, right? Because our religion instructs us that we're to pass these teachings on to our children. And so we're educators. But because our beliefs are biblically based, sometimes we're out of step with what the culture sees as the appropriate way to educate. And so our religious liberties within our society and culture are especially important. And then we're concerned about family issues and the life issues. So those are our priorities for communication. So we communicate to our folks about policy and proposed legislation that will impact their schools in those areas. But then we also communicate to policymakers on the federal level. We want them to know about the good work that our schools are doing, the types of families and church ministries and school ministries that make up our association, so that as they craft policy, they can take into account our unique perspective on religious liberty and education.
These are important issues. Now, we've been talking about school choice programs,
And some parents especially are concerned that while there's this opportunity of school choice, while they can send their kids to the school of their choice, are there going to be some of these regulations that come upon a Christian school that participates in a school choice program? We've seen a couple of court cases going on, especially on schools being able to participate on the front end and on the back end. And I noticed that the American Association for Christian Schools has been active in some of these. One of these was Carson versus Macon. That is the main case that's going before the Supreme Court. What's the Supreme Court case, and how does it affect Christian education?
Yeah, so Carson v. Macon is really one of the most recent cases to address this cultural moment that we're in related to really First Amendment principles. If I had to characterize it, I would say, you know, the First Amendment talked about prohibiting an establishment of religion, but then not prohibiting the free exercise thereof. Well, Carson v. Macon is the most recent case in a long line of cases like Espinoza v. Montana and Trinity Lutheran that are trying to address this problem, or really not this problem, but this question of if a state is funding education through school choice programs, how can religious schools participate and it not be an establishment of religion? So how do we balance religious people's free exercise rights within civil society, and education is an important part of civil society? How do we balance that with the prohibition against establishing religion? And so Carson v. Macon is a case out of Maine, where Maine for decades has provided money for rural areas for kids to attend private schools that can't be serviced by a public school system. But recently, well, I think in the 80s, they prohibited the money, or 90s, they prohibited money going from the public education system into religious schools. And so Carson v. Macon is going to address this issue, and has the state of Maine improperly restricted the free exercise of families who want their children in a Christian school? And if this service is provided to any parent in rural areas, then is it constitutionally permissible to say, but if you're a religious parent, then you can't participate in the program? And so that's what that issue in Carson v. Macon. We did join several other religious institutions in requesting that the Supreme Court, in an amicus brief, requesting that the Supreme Court decide in favor of the parents and religious schools and against the state of Maine.
Jameson Coppola of the American Association of Christian Schools is with us, representing over 100,000 students and teachers. We're talking about religious schools, and are they able to participate in school choice programs? We've been talking about this Maine case, whether or not schools are allowed into the program. But recently, you wrote in your Washington Flyer about a past case where we saw a state program that tried to kick out a Christian school, and the state lost and the Christian school won. Can you tell us about Bethel Ministries versus Salmon?
Yeah, we were very concerned about this case because it involved a progression of decisions for the state of Maryland that with an existing school choice program, I think that provided monies for school improvement as well as curriculum for students, and the state made some changes to that where they eventually were going around to schools and requesting copies of handbooks to see if the schools were operating in such a way that the state would determine were in violation of their civil rights statutes. And Bethel Ministries is a K-8 school in Maryland that was participating in the school choice program for Maryland, and they have a biblical worldview as it relates to marriage. So they believe in one man, one woman for one life, and that's what they teach is the way that humans flourish. And the state said, no, that very teaching violates our state civil rights statute. And so they kicked the school out of the program, and they tried to claw back, I think, over $100,000 in back payments from the previous 2 years that the school had received as part of the program. And we're very pleased to see that the court said that the state of Maryland had violated the school's free exercise, their First Amendment rights, And that in this case, the government was actually discriminating against the school. The school wasn't discriminating against students. And so we were happy to see that as a win for religious liberty and religious education, religious schools, and their ability to participate in commonly available, publicly available school choice programs.
So what we're seeing is that while school choice is becoming an option for parents, thanks to organizations like yours, you're making sure that Christians are not being just kicked out of these programs, that parents, you know, they're afraid that if they join, if their school joins a school choice program, the next year they may get kicked out because they have a sincerely held biblical belief. But the American Association of Christian Schools is on the front lines helping defend them.
Yes, we are by communicating, again, the unique aspect of what we do, the service that we provide to parents who desire a biblical religious education for their kids, and our rights as religious people to be fully involved in civic society and take part in the benefits that are provided to all citizens so that we're not excluded from these commonly available programs that help parents and families provide education to their students. So we're very happy to be a spokesman for those schools, to work with other quality organizations in the legal area, and then to be a conduit of information to policymakers, making sure that our religious liberty and educational freedoms are protected.
Now, President Biden attempted to pass a recent reconciliation bill that would have brought about universal child care and pre-K. This might have been considered a quote, child care choice, but there was a concern that the American Association of Christian Schools had in this universal child care bill. What was the concerns of AACS?
Yeah, we were concerned, you know, overall with the amount of money being spent. Our people, I think, you could probably classify us as conservative when it comes to our politics, in that we think the role of the federal government should be limited by constitutional principles, and it certainly was an incredible increase in spending on things that are not directly connected with the authority we believe the Constitution gives to federal government. But in particular, there was a provision where the federal government is trying to fund more pre-K and child care options from the federal level. And so it would have expanded incredibly the amount of money that the federal government was providing in the form of grants to open or to provide child care services to families, and for states to open up K-4 programs within their state public school programs. And so we were especially concerned about that provision within the Build Back Better bill. Our founders were fond of saying, and it's a good statement that has some some biblical language in it, and they are fond of saying, we are fond of repeating, with shekels come shackles. And there's a certain propriety that we all understand that when somebody pays for something, they get some amount of say in how the money's spent. Well, when the federal government provides that money, then they get a say in how the money is spent. And so money from the federal government can equal control, especially if that money is considered, the technical term is federal financial assistance. So how the money is delivered matters. The universal pre-K provision in the Build Back Better was a direct delivery of money to child care centers and states for pre-K, and we are very concerned about the federal government's involvement on what should remain a local and family matter.
Jamison Coppola is with us. We'll be back after this break. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network.
For the Worldview Report, I'm Brennan House. Our website's worldviewreport.com. Go to Luke chapter 21, and what do we see in verse 8? Jesus is asked by his disciples, what are some of the signs of your second coming? And he says in verse 8, when men say, I am. Now, your Bible probably says, when men say, I am he or I am Christ. And the word he or Christ is in italics, right? You know why? Because that wasn't in the original manuscript.
What Jesus said was, you'll know that one of the signs of my second coming is when men say, I am. Do you know what's being taught now? The power of I am. Whether it's Joel Osteen, Oprah Winfrey, or Glenn Beck. They are just three of many that teach what's known as the power of I am, using the power of words or the title of God to create. It's shamanism. It's the mixing of New Age occultism with Christianity. Jesus said, when you see the mixing of New Age with Christianity and the blaspheming of my name like this, it's one of the signs of my soon second coming. Look up.
And we're back here with Crosstalk on the VCY America Radio Network. I'm Randy Melchert, filling in for Jim Schneider. Proverbs 22:6 tells us, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Christian education, education in general, the rights of parents to place their kids in the school that they believe in. We're going to open up the phone lines and take a couple callers later. Our phone number is 800-733-9829. 1-800-733-9829. We've been talking with Jameson Coppola from the American Association of Christian Schools about what the American Association of Christian Schools has been doing, and we've been talking about federal financial assistance, that this is a term that your organization has been working to make sure isn't bound on. There's been programs that, you know, maybe it's a school lunch program or some of these things that are just even neutral benefits, but you've been lobbying to make sure that schools aren't being bound by a plethora of regulations when they attempt to help their students.
Yes, that's true. Whenever you have a school choice program, it's really important how the money's delivered. And we prefer programs, we think, because of our core values of the fact that parents are the ones that should decide educational choice. We believe that in school choice program, money should be delivered to the family, so that the family then can make the best educational choice for their children. And a lot of times school choice programs will want to deliver the money directly to schools or child care centers, and we think that that's probably not the best method to accomplish school choice.
The goal here is that the aid is to the family, not to a religious organization, which, I mean, that doctrine's been even upheld at the Supreme Court.
Indeed, it has, yeah. A natural break in the process, which legitimizes the fact that when the money is delivered to a family, there's no establishment of religion, because then the free choice of the family in choosing the education that is best for them is the basis for that the spending of that money. And so, again, it fits with our principles that the parent is really the steward of that child, and so it fits with our biblical outlook as well.
Was reading some of these Supreme Court cases, and I mean, there's even a comparison to other programs, that it's interesting that within education they are trying to discriminate against religious education, and yet if you're a recipient of, say, food stamps or an EBT card, they don't ask the owner of 7-Eleven what church he attends, but that there is a distinct hostility that ACS has been on the leading fight to protect the religious beliefs of Christian schools that are seeking to reach their students.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this came to light in the Trinity Lutheran case that I mentioned earlier. It was a program that provided, I think, ground-up tire material for playgrounds at schools. And when a religious child care center applied for funds to put this recycled tire material on their playground, they were denied. And one of the questions that continued to come up is, you know, why should religious children be in more danger from, you know, injury on the playground than other children? And I think it's an important question to ask. Just because religious parents have chosen a religious school for their children shouldn't mean that they're deprived of this benefit that is helpful to the state in recycling tires and helpful to protect children's noggins, you know, from injury if they fall on the playground. You could say the same for fire service and police service. You know, we don't discriminate in many of the publicly provided programs that are good for society and people in general. So why should we discriminate in the provision of education?
Let's go to the phones. Line one, you're on the air with us.
This is Warren. I was calling in about your school of choice programs. I was wondering why the schools don't have to tell the parents that you have a choice of schools. I didn't even know that till this summer. One of your men wrote that article about it in I know you're familiar with that, Wisconsin News' paper, and why parents can't speak out at the school board meetings. And how would we go about making the public more aware of this school choice program?
That's a good question here. Jameson, how can we help parents to find out about school choice? What's a great place where they can go to find out about school choice as well as legislative issues affecting Christian education?
Yeah, it's a great question, and thanks for the question, Warren. School choice is a really important message to get out. I think your previous guest on the show with the American Federation of Children gave some excellent resources on how to educate yourself and to communicate on school choice. Our website, aacs.org, is a great resource for religious educators, and there is a weekly update that we provide that will talk about school choice issues. There are a growing number of parent-motivated organizations that are talking about school choice. I've met a very dynamic young lady, Keisha King, that has started a movement called Mass Exodus. And her encouragement is, if you want to make real substantive change in public education, the best thing to do is move out of public education until they're more willing to hear from parents. She's spokeswoman for a group called Moms for Liberty. Those would be great organizations to follow, to look up, and to stay connected to the people that are trying to amplify the message of school choice.
Let's go to line two. Line two, what's your question?
Hello?
Yes. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, I was just saying, wondering if we are to fully want to fund Christian schools or households, at least, how do we reconcile that being equal with Muslim education, for example, or New Age beliefs?
Good question, Jameson.
Well, I'm a firm believer that free speech works. I think the way that God created human beings is with free will. And part of free will is being able to speak what your thoughts are. Part of human liberty is to be able to live authentically in the way that you believe is good and right. And so I like what the founder said about these issues, and they say, you know, the answer to speech you disagree with is not to shut down the person you disagree with, but rather to answer their assertions, to speak with them and to speak loudly about what you believe, and so that there can be some deliberation on who's more correct. And so I think we have to be very careful, and we have to guard the principle of religious liberty.
Thank you very much, Jameson, for being with us. Jameson Coppola, American Association of Christian Schools, AACS.org. This has been Crosstalk. Thank you for joining with us today.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the Internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Take Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208. Or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.